We'll discuss the latest issues facing the nation this hour when we welcome in Wisconsin's two U.S. senators, Democrat Tammy Baldwin and Republican Ron Johnson. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 8.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, July 23rd. Our guests will weigh in on calls to arm domestic military members, the Iran nuclear deal, and other issues that matter to you. So, what issue matters to you? What would you like to ask about? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Very happy to have with us Tammy Baldwin, a Democratic U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. She serves on the Senate Homeland Security, Appropriations and Budget, Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committees. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's great to have you with us.
It's great to join you, Joy.
You introduced a bill yesterday in response to the attacks at military facilities in Chattanooga, Tennessee last week. You said in a release that recruiting centers and reserve facilities lack force-type measures, which you called unacceptable. So what would your bill do?
Well, we need to make certain that the brave men and women in our all-volunteer force who work in their communities are adequately protected here at home. So this legislation will put in place qualified and specially trained armed force protection to strengthen the safety and security at these type of military facilities. It will also mandate physical security improvements, things as simple as bulletproof glass and better surveillance cameras, beyond the armed force protection element, physical security measures.
So your colleague Ron Johnson unveiled a bill this week that would allow qualified, trained, and certified military personnel to carry their privately owned firearms on military installations to lift the restrictions on doing that. Why aren't you going that far?
Well, I think that, first of all, we have to look at the various places where our servicemen and women work when they work in the community or on U.S. military bases. The Pentagon leadership, the various branches of the service, their leadership, have pretty strongly advised against doing the type of measures that Senator Johnson proposes on U.S. military bases, but are strongly looking at the aspect of his bill and my bill that would allow force protection in community sites like recruiting centers and reserve support centers, as were targeted so tragically in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And so I think that we should look at, as our governor has in other instances, those community-based work sites where our armed services members are often working.
You, Governor Walker issued an executive order this week that would allow members of the Wisconsin National Guard to carry weapons while on duty. What do you think of that?
You know, I think that as far as I have seen of it and been briefed on it, that the governor's desire to better protect the dedicated men and women of Wisconsin's National Guard is absolutely right, and I share that. And my understanding is, while the Guard is still in the process of implementing Governor Walker's orders, they haven't ironed out all the details, it appears to be a measured and appropriate plan to boost the protection of our Guard members.
You put out a statement last week that I guess essentially said you were satisfied with the notion of the Iran nuclear deal, but you were going to take time to review it. So it's been a little while now. What do you think of it?
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to just express my pride in America's leadership on this agreement. You know, the administration convened a number of the world's powers to negotiate with Iran to make sure that we can assure the world that they will never secure a nuclear weapon. And that is historic. It is, the fact that they were able to come to a final agreement is a huge accomplishment. Of course, I need to take the time to carefully review it. In fact, yesterday we had a significant briefing with Secretary Kerry, Secretary Moniz, and Secretary Liu about the individual components of this plan. They were able to answer questions of my fellow senators. And I have to say, I haven't finished all of the review, but I am impressed and am likely to support the final deal.
We have a caller, Tom, in Burlington with a question about the deal. Tom?
It's been my experience that everyone who's got the atomic bomb finds out there's nothing you can really do with it. The thing is, Iran, where Iran is, in Israel, the wind blows from west to east, and if they would blow up Israel, all the fallout's going to actually fall right back on them. But my question is this. If they do have a bomb, do we have the capability to wipe out their delivery systems, whichever they are, missiles or however they would do it, before they could even get the thing off the ground?
Yeah. Well, Tom, this deal is to prevent them ever from being able to enrich enough fissile material to ever get bomb-making potential. And, in fact, not only does it focus on the supply chain, if you will, at every step, but what fissile material they were able to enrich prior to these negotiations beginning, they will have to give up. And so, fortunately, because of what this negotiation tries to achieve, we don't really have to worry about the issues that which way the wind blows after a detonation, et cetera. So the deal itself, the negotiation has resulted in a deal that is focused on intrusive inspections, verification. It's not a trust and a handshake. This is understanding that Iran is a dangerous adversary, causes a lot of instability and violence, frankly, in the area. And so it's not based on trust. It's based on the need to verify at every point the supply chain, I guess, is the way to look at it, to prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon.
Yeah. A general reaction to the GOP, including Senator Johnson, who says Iran won these nuclear negotiations hands down. Governor Walker says he would throw this deal out on day one if elected president. What's your response to that?
Well, let's say that this deal is ratified. That's not the correct term, but there's going to be congressional vote on this. Let's say that it's put in place and that it is successful in allowing an intrusive inspection regime that we are able to through the International Atomic Energy Commission assure the world that there is no progress being made on a nuclear weapons program in Iran, why would one throw that out 2 years from now? Or, you know, that just doesn't make any sense. And look at what's at stake here. We have the ability to make sure that Iran doesn't acquire a nuclear weapon. And look at what the alternatives are.
Yeah, and we're going to think about that as we check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. When we come back, we will talk with Senator Baldwin about some other issues, including some issues that she is working on regarding caregivers and more. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking for the rest of this half hour with Tammy Baldwin, Democratic U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. Coming up in a few minutes, we will be welcoming in Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. We invited Senator Baldwin to be with us a couple of weeks ago, but her schedule didn't allow for it, when she introduced America's Promise Act, which would make the first 2 years of community college free. And Senator Baldwin, why do you want the first 2 years of community college to be free?
Well, you know, a high school education is in many cases not enough to prepare somebody for the 21st century economy and a career path. And, you know, when we originally as a country and as a state in Wisconsin made a commitment to public education through high school, that was the design, that we would be able to assist in preparing our young people for the world of work, for a career. And we also know at the same time that families are facing crippling student debt. The average debt load of a Wisconsin student these days, going through 4 years of public education, is about $28,000. But we see much more, you know, that's an average, so that means that there are students who are shouldering a lot more debt. And the idea, especially as I speak with those in the business community, in manufacturing, et cetera, is they're finding a skills gap. They're finding people who certainly are seeking work but don't have some of the skills needed to operate advanced manufacturing equipment, to participate in Wisconsin's economy. And so it's a component of our sluggish growth and recovery from the recession. So in light of all of those really critical factors, I embraced the president's call for a program to cover the first 2 years of either community college or technical college. And this legislation would provide full-time community college students who are eligible with tuition, and they could save an average of $3,800 a year by participation in this program. I just really believe that every student deserves the opportunity to gain the skills and knowledge that they need to succeed in the 21st century economy without drowning in debt.
Yeah, we did a show on it, and most of our callers were all for it. You also worked with Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine on a bill that would try to develop a national strategy to support family caregivers. What's the issue you're trying to get at here, and how would this legislation help?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, last week, Senator Susan Collins and I introduced the RAISE Family Caregivers Act to ensure that everybody has access to the care and assistance they need and deserve as they age or as they struggle with any disabling condition. And what it does, and it's a pretty simple first step, but it recognizes that family caregivers are integral to our country's long-term care system and to our economy. If you think about just the state of Wisconsin, there's almost 500,000 family caregivers in Wisconsin. They're providing, if you were to compensate them for their care that they're providing to their loved ones, roughly $5.8 billion annually in care to adults who need help with daily activities, maybe bathing, maybe preparing meals, maybe transportation to doctor's appointments, etc. And despite this very significant contribution to our economy and to our community, these family caregivers usually kind of land upon these responsibilities without any training, without any recognition, without any education, or even support in them fulfilling this family caregiving role. And also, in many cases, they call it the sandwich generation. There's often people who are juggling their own responsibilities to their own families, their own children, their own job, as well as trying to assist in the care of an elderly relative, mom or dad or in-law. And so all this says is that we need to recognize this component of the long-term care system and develop a national strategy to strengthen the family caregiving, to strengthen family caregiving. Perhaps as simple as providing some of the training to allow family caregivers to do the responsibilities that they have taken on. I have to say this is really personal to me. I know we've talked before about the fact that I was raised by my mm-hmm. maternal grandparents. And so I know when I reached, my 20s and 30s, I was dealing with issues of aging probably before most adults are looking at those issues. And it was a real learning curve for me, whether it was just trying to protect my grandmother from, from fraudulent solicitations that were coming through the mail or, problem, or, making sure she was making her doctor's appointments and was able to care for herself with my help in an independent setting before she needed more care. And I know it could have been very helpful for me to have more resources available to increase my knowledge about making decisions with her. And I think other family caregivers deserve that support.
Ann emails, I'm concerned about the dangerous explosive oil trains that are traveling through Milwaukee and other Wisconsin communities. I know that Senator Baldwin has spoken out on these dangers. What needs to be done to restore safety to our communities?
A lot of things need to be done, and I share Ann's strong concern, especially as we've seen just in a matter of years going from none of this coming through our state to an average of about 44 trains per week, sometimes carrying over 100 cars of volatile oil. So a couple of things. First, we have the tank car issue and whether the tank cars that are being used to convey this North Dakota Bakken crude oil are safe enough to do so through our communities, both populous and rural. Secondly, just the volatility of the crude oil itself is a real, real concern. There are things they could do at the source to diminish its explosive components. And they're not forced to do that right now. They ought to, because we've seen the results in many communities across the country of this very volatile crude oil coming through. And there are a number of other issues with regard to training our first responders in the case that there is a derailment, there is an explosion. First responders need training. They need knowledge of when and how often these trains are coming through. And there's a number of other things. I have been fighting on a number of fronts to see additional safeguards implemented, including the introduction of legislation with that focus. But frankly, I think our current transportation debate that is unfolding in the Senate as we speak provides a great opportunity, and so far I don't think it's been seized to the extent it should, to improve our transportation infrastructure, especially as it regards rails. And then lastly, as I said, there's many issues relating to rail safety that we need to focus on, but the freight rail lines themselves, they have the responsibility to focus on the upkeep of their bridges and their rails. Many of these derailments were caused by problems with that, and we need to make sure that the federal oversight agencies are requiring that they keep all of their infrastructure in tip-top shape.
And we'll leave it there. We have one caller, and this maybe is going to be unfair, but I hope you can answer. He wants to know who you endorse for president or for the Democratic nomination for president, Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders.
I am supporting Hillary Clinton and very excited about the campaign to come.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Tammy Baldwin, Democratic U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. We now will welcome in the Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson to talk with us about many of the same topics that we just covered with Senator Baldwin, including his bill to end the restriction on service members carrying firearms on military installations. And we will welcome your questions for Senator Johnson at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Ron Johnson is a Republican U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. He's the chair of the Senate Homeland Security Committee and serves on the Foreign Relations and Budget Committees. Good morning.
Morning, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm good. Well, we just asked Tammy Baldwin who she was endorsing for the Democratic nomination for president. Seems like I should ask you who you endorse for the Republican nomination for president.
She has a lot fewer to choose from.
You've got 16 to choose from. But you know what?
It's in the
news. Yeah, it's in the news that you gave a donation to Marco Rubio, and Scott Walker says you're still friends. What's going on?
No. It was... We have what they call leadership PACs, and those are really designed to support other Senate candidates. And we gave that, so that's very common where you just donate to your fellow senators for their Senate campaigns, and that's what that was about. Now, I'm obviously a big supporter of Scott Walker. That has no impact on the presidential race whatsoever.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this bill you introduced this week on Tuesday that would end the restriction on service members carrying firearms on military installations. Briefly, what exactly would your plan do?
Well, what it would allow is qualified, trained, and certified military personnel would be permitted to carry their privately owned firearms on military installations, including reserve centers and recruitment offices. So I think what's become pretty obvious is with the Islamic terrorists specifically targeting the finest among us, our members of our military, as well as public safety officials, police officers, at least police officers can be armed. There are policies in place that do not allow the military members to be armed, and so they're vulnerable. And we need to end that vulnerability. And we just saw, five innocent people murdered in Chattanooga. We saw 13 people murdered at Fort Hood. 12 were injured at the Washington's Navy Yard. Or 12 people were killed and injured at Washington's Navy Yard. And so this is something that's pretty obvious. I understand kind of the complexity of the situation. You want to maintain the command structure. So as chairman of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs, I just thought it was important that I weigh in on this, introduce what I think is a good piece of legislation, but I'm more than willing to work with Chairman McCain and Chairman Thornberry of the Armed Services Committees in both chambers. I'm hoping we'll be able to resolve this in the National Defense Authorization Act that's being conferenced right now between the two chambers. It'd be nice to get this policy reversed in a manner that the military supports as well.
Senator Baldwin unveiled her own bill this week that would beef up security at recruiting centers and other military facilities. Why isn't that good enough?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what the final solution to this is going to be. But again, I just think it makes perfect sense. I can't imagine better trained and you know, people better equipped to actually defend themselves, and we should give them that capability.
Governor Scott Walker issued an executive order this week to let members of the Wisconsin National Guard carry weapons while on duty. Some critics have raised concerns about accidental discharges or other issues pegged to an increase in weapons on hand or military involved with domestic policing. How concerned are you about that?
Not overly. I mean, there are hundreds of millions of guns out in America, and from my standpoint, I'd rather have criminals be a little concerned as opposed to law-abiding citizens trained in the use of firearms. And again, that's what we're talking about with military personnel. I mean, who's better trained? Who's going to be more responsible than those individuals? And so we've basically disarmed them and made them vulnerable. We can't allow that policy to go forward in light of the very real threat that Islamic terror poses specifically to the members of our military and public safety officials. So, again, we have to recognize the changing realities. Those policies might have made some sense in the past. And, again, I understand, you know, the complexity of the issue. But, you know, reality changes. And, you know, I don't like the fact that Islamic terrorism is threatening Americans, threatening military members. But they are, and those are real threats, and we need to respond to that.
Tom on Facebook asks, which high-ranking military members has Senator Johnson consulted before proposing arming troops out of combat? I haven't heard anyone except politicians calling for this change.
Well, we are working with, you know, again, Senator McCain's staff, House Member Congressman Thornberry. Again, I think that is probably going to be the best place to do this, and they are obviously, as Chairman of Armed Services, working with members of the military in terms of exactly how we address the situation. But in my own office, I have my chief of staff is a former retired lieutenant colonel in the Army. I have a number of other, I think I have six or seven former military officers working for me, so they know a lot about these policies, and they worked with their own contacts and with other staff of other members. This was actually put together quickly, but in a very thoughtful manner by people that actually understand the situation, have served. I think we have something like 60 plus years of military service. I think it might even be closer to 90. I can't remember the exact number of staff members on my state and Washington, D.C. staff of former military members. So this is actually done and put together by people that really know what they're talking about.
Yeah. We have just a minute before a newscast, and we will pick up after the news, but I just want to get started. Why do you say Iran won those nuclear negotiations hands down?
Because they did. I think, you know, contrary to President Obama's assurance that this prevents Iran from becoming a nuclear power, blocks every avenue, it may delay them. I mean, I'll concede that point, but I think this definitely puts Iran on the path to become a nuclear power a decade in the future, maybe shorter if they do cheat and we're able to catch them cheating. I'm highly concerned about the verification process, but you have to go no further than to in terms of finding out exactly how much we, you know, how thoroughly we lost those negotiations, then look at the fact that the four American hostages are still in Iran. I mean, don't you think with something so important, the lifting those sanctions, there will be tens of billions of dollars flowing in the Iranian economy? Don't you think if we would have even come close to winning those negotiations, we would have at least got those hostages out of Iran? They're still, you know, languishing in Iranian jails. That's how badly we lost these negotiations.
Ron Johnson is a Republican U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. He will answer your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardin Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardin Show. We'll check news and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardin. This is the Ideas Network. Checking the weather forecast for today. Partly cloudy. There's a slight chance of thunderstorms in northern Wisconsin. We can expect highs in the low to mid 80s. Coming up in our next hour after 8 o'clock on Sunday, Milwaukee had its 86th fatal shooting, which tied it with the total shootings and gun deaths from 2014. Law enforcement and community leaders are beginning to implement a plan to wage war on gun violence. We'll talk about that coming up in our next hour. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with U.S. Senator Ron Johnson during this half hour, welcoming your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Secretary of State John Kerry and other top administration officials will face tough questions on the Iran deal at a Senate hearing today as lawmakers raise new concerns about alleged secret side deals struck with Tehran over its nuclear program. Senator Tom Cotton is saying that we are only now discovering that parts of this dangerous agreement are being kept secret, begs the question of what other elements may be also secret and entirely free from public scrutiny. So what questions, Senator Johnson, do you have for Secretary of State John Kerry?
Well, we had a secure briefing yesterday, and those secret side deals were brought up, and really they relate to the deal that the IAEA has entered into with Iran separately from the negotiations. Actually, quite jaw-dropping that our negotiating team had no idea of the sampling procedure at one of the facilities in terms of finding out what is the potential military dimensions of the program. You need to know what Iran has done in the past to be able to monitor what they may do in the future. And what we found out, we believe, is that Iran will be providing the samples for testing. Now, I mean, think about that. I mean, most people are familiar with urine samples for employment testing, that type of thing. It's basically akin to an individual bringing in their own urine sample. It could be anybody's, and these samples that will then be presented to the IAEA. I don't know how you're going to be able to follow the chain of custody here. And what was even jaw dropping about is our negotiators did not know exactly what that procedure was. So this is an incredibly complex deal. I think the bottom line is this definitely puts Iran a more economically strong, in other words, a stronger Iran, because we're going to lift the sanctions. There will be tens of billions or over a decade, probably hundreds of billions of dollars flowing into that economy, the economy of the largest state sponsor of terrorism in the world, and that basically puts them on a path to become a nuclear power. So, by the way, there's really, from my standpoint, no such thing as a peaceful nuclear program of enrichment in Iran. If they want peaceful nuclear power, they should buy the fuel rods. The fact that they enrich, the fact that they've subject themselves to the sanctions and the isolation in the world, the economic harm. There's only one reason they do that, is they want a nuclear weapon, and that is a real threat to the region and really to the world and to America.
You know, we have lots of callers for you, but I know that you wanted to talk about this federal investigation into whether Milwaukee voucher schools are discriminating against children with disabilities. You held a hearing in Milwaukee on this week on the program. What's going on here?
Well, the hearing really was just kind of a review and assessment of the Milwaukee School Choice Program, partly because as chairman of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs, the District of Columbia is within my jurisdiction, and the district has its own school choice program, which President Obama has been attempting to defund for about 6 years. And so I thought it'd be appropriate to go to the birthplace of school choice, Milwaukee, and take a look at how well has it gone. And I would say probably as difficult as it is, and we had Dr. John Witte, who's pretty much the noted expert on studying these, he certainly said that from a standpoint of attainment, student graduation rates, entrance into better colleges, school choices, significantly shown better results. Although other things are more difficult to measure, From my standpoint, the best measurement is how many parents are taking advantage of it. And if you're in a company, you look in your sales chart increase as dramatically as the number of parents and students taking advantage of school choice programs in Wisconsin, you have to say there's something going right there because a lot more people are taking advantage of it. So that was one aspect of the hearing, is just an assessment so that we can, we'll have additional hearings on this, but, I've got to weigh in and be part of the reauthorization of the D.C. student loan program or student choice or school choice program. And, from my standpoint, I think it's just a basic right to allow children, if they're in failing schools, to have the same opportunity as, for example, President Obama's children have to get a good education in a private school. But I am concerned about this administration's seeming desire to end school choice programs in Louisiana. They have this four-year investigation on the Milwaukee school choice program through the Department of Public Instruction in Wisconsin, and we're just asking questions of the Department of Justice. What's happening with this four-year investigation? And we're getting no answers, which from my standpoint, makes me a little suspicious.
I also wanted to ask you what's going on with this legislation to authorize highway funding. Apparently, yesterday, the Senate voted to move forward with a six-year federal highway bill.
Well, we voted to proceed to debate. In other words, that's the first step in what can be a very long process under Senate procedures to talk about the bill. The House is looking at just a short-term extension. What the Senate is trying to do is provide the certainty to states and to, for example, contractors that are going to be building the kind of infrastructure that everybody obviously recognizes only government can really build. It's a top priority government is providing infrastructure. We're trying to do something that hasn't been done in a number of years, is provide a longer-term highway bill with the funding that is offset by different savings. Now, there's a fair amount of controversy in that. There are other elements of people trying to put, for example, the reauthorization of the Ex-Im Bank, which is controversial. So the Senate can be a little frustrating and kind of a messy process, and we're kind of witnessing that as we failed in our first attempt two days ago to proceed to debate on the bill. Now we actually got on the bill. I can't predict the end result.
Congressional Republicans are looking to withhold federal funding for so-called sanctuary cities. How big a threat do you think these cities pose to U.S. security?
Well, I think we saw there have been 122 cases of homicides committed by somebody that had been either detained and had a detainer on them, and because of the sanctuary cities, they were released in the general public to commit the murder. And, the most recent one was, of course, in San Francisco, the tragedy of that young 32-year-old woman. And this is a policy that is incentivizing people to flock to those cities, and then they're pretty much immune from prosecution, and they can go on and commit these acts. So this is, I think, a common-sense proposal that would just say that if there's a detainer, and by the way, there's only about removal orders on about 7,000 of the 12 million people in this country illegally. There's only detainer orders on about 7,000 of them. But so where there is a detainer, an order for removal of those individuals, that would put the burden on those cities that have declared themselves sanctuary cities to hold those individuals so that federal authorities can obtain them and actually prosecute them either on a federal basis or deport them. That just makes common sense. It's actually a pretty modest proposal, but had we done that, some of these murders would not have occurred, and we can prevent future murders from occurring.
Art in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Art.
Hi. Senator, we're hoping you will join at least six of your Republican colleagues in co-sponsoring the Freedom to Travel bill, which would recognize and restore the right of Americans to travel freely to Cuba if they so desire. Cuba has dropped their restrictions so their citizens can travel anywhere in the world, and we think Americans should have at least that much right. Will you do that?
Probably not, Art. I'd basically disagree with President Obama's change in policy here. I'll readily admit that what we've been trying to do for the last 50 years hasn't worked, but that isn't because of necessarily bad policy. It's because of a bad regime in Cuba. And I think our policy ought to be, number one, to protect America's national security, and number two, do what we can to help the oppressed people of Cuba. With that regime in place, that's not going to happen. Of course, by allowing a freer flow of American funds into Cuba, that's not going to go to the people. It's basically going to members of the regime, and it's just going to prop up that regime. And I think it's going to make it more likely that the successors to the Castro brothers will be equally as oppressive. So, it's not like Cuba has not had access to world markets. Every other country's basically traded with them, hasn't really done anything much for their people, and that's because the Castro regime itself is corrupt and needs to be replaced. I'm afraid this just strengthens the hand of the regime. I think it's a bad policy change.
David emails, do you, Senator Johnson, support Senator Baldwin's efforts to provide 2 years of free community college to Wisconsin students? And if not, what are you doing to reduce the crippling amount of student debt that our children are carrying?
Well, first of all, there's no such thing as a free lunch, and there's also no such thing as free college. Somebody's going to pay for that. And, there's been a recent study, I think it's by the New York Federal Reserve, that basically said for every dollar of federal assistance into higher education, tuition increased, I think, 65 cents. So you can make the argument that as well-intentioned these programs are, by enticing our children to incur, I think, collectively $1.3 trillion of student loan debt, we have actually made college less accessible because we've made it less affordable. It's kind of basic market economics. You pour a lot of money into a marketplace and prices go up. So I think what we really ought to do is reassess our policies and there is no free lunch, and somebody's going to be paying for those 2 years of college. I guess my suggestion was, and this is what I did in my private life, being involved in the education system, is give students and their parents all the information on all their options after high school. Listen, if you want a 4-year degree, that's great. There are 2-year degrees. There's technical college. There's going out in the workforce. There are tens of thousands of jobs in manufacturing in Wisconsin that are not being filled. Kids can leave high school, go into manufacturing, and there are great careers in manufacturing. And manufacturers, I was one of them, would pay for continuing education. So we need to kind of break out of paradigm where we're saying everybody has to get a 4-year degree. It's just not the case. There are plenty of options. Students should explore those options. And again, I would encourage students to take a look at manufacturing. You might get your college education or your technical college education paid for by your employer.
We'll leave it there for this time. Thanks for being with us.
Have a great day.
Ron Johnson, Republican U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. Earlier we heard from Tammy Baldwin, Democratic U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Kayla Blado and to Christy Taylor and to Elizabeth Deliquess for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.